on the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello gets an update from Register reporter Peter Jesserer Smith on Christians in the Middle East. Also, Jeanette talks with Register blogger Carrie Gress about Father James Flanagan, the late founder of the Society of the Most Holy Trinity. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Peter Jesserer Smith, is a Register staff reporter. Peter helped cover Pope Francis's historic visit to Jerusalem and the Holy Land in 2014. He has also reported for various other Catholic media outlets. Today, Peter talks with Jeanette about the current status of Christians in the Middle East.
Peter, it's always good to have you again on Register Radio. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Hey, thanks for having me, Jeanette. Always a pleasure.
So today we're talking about a big interview that you had not too long ago with Cardinal Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York City. And yep. You spoke to the Archbishop, or the Cardinal, I should say, on his return from a region in Iraq called Kurdistan. And this was a very important trip for him. It was a trip he had a lot to say about. But first of all, let's talk about what he was doing there in Iraq.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Cardinal Timothy Dolan is the chair of the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, which is an organization that is set up to assist the church in the Middle East. And he was invited by the Catholic bishops of Iraq, many of whom are in Kurdistan now, to see the church there and to see the more than 100,000 Christian refugees. Wow. That have had to take up residence in Kurdistan because of the invasion that ISIS had committed in June 2014, and its continued occupation of Mosul and large parts of the Nineveh Plain. So he went there at their invitation and was able to see a lot of not only the suffering of people who have been removed from their homes, but I think the bigger story was the enormous generosity that the church had been able to provide and to help them get some semblance of their life and dignity back as refugees just wanting to go back home.
Sure, sure. Now, Cardinal Dolan is no stranger to the plight of persecuted Christians. When he was leading the U.S. Bishops' Conference here in the United States for the many years that he led, that's when the bishops and many Catholic organizations began this battle, if you will, with the Obama administration over the Health and Human Services mandate for contraception. He was, you know, really speaking a lot at that time about religious freedom. And then towards the end of his time as the president of the Bishops' Conference was when so many Christians in the Middle East were being driven from their lands by Islamic fundamentalists and really Islamic terrorists. So he ended his time as president of the Bishops' Conference talking a lot about these persecuted Christians, which he is obviously still doing. It's been his real purpose to raise awareness about what is going on.
Absolutely.
There. And as you say, he witnessed a great outpouring of generosity. What exactly did he see in the camps of these refugees?
Well, I'll tell you some of the great things that he was seeing. He was seeing that finally the refugees had been able to get a lot of support. Now, it's not ideal conditions, but there is elementary sort of housing, medical care, and education. That's a very important that's going on right now. So he was able to see that, but he was able to see the connection between the partnership between the church in Iraq and Iraqi Kurdistan and the church over here with what the important aid that Catholic Near East Welfare Association has been able to provide, and the partnership that they work out with Catholic Relief Services and Aid to the Church in Need. They all provide different pieces of the puzzle that work together to sustain over 100,000 people that have truly left everything for Jesus Christ. And some even have given up their lives. He was truly with the confessors and people who have been, and the families of martyrs for Jesus Christ.
Now, Peter, you have also been to areas of the Middle East, Jordan and Lebanon, where you've witnessed also and have met some refugee families and priests who work with refugees or who have been refugees themselves. Who are these people? What are they? What is it like to meet them? And what most impresses you about these people?
Well, you know, one of the things that happens, and Cardinal Dolan and I talked about this because we both have a common experience. When you meet these people, even though you've advocated for them before, all of a sudden it becomes so much more real because it's personal. You see their stories and it affects you in such a way that you feel a real sense of urgency to talk about who they are and what is going on. I was with doctors, lawyers, engineers, a man who knows 5 different languages and can do reverse engineering, along with people in mechanics. I mean, these are middle class, some even wealthy people, and now they're living in spaces carved out in church basements and in school basements, carved out with, lines of, like blankets, mm-hmm. have separate living spaces for them and their families. And it can be demeaning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing because actually the only way to imagine it is if you and your neighbors all of a sudden had to leave absolutely everything and live in a church's basement and be completely dependent on the kindness of strangers and have to be in line for a shower for a week.
Sure.
And that's your life now. That is your life. And you made that choice. And it's, life is not comfortable, but you made that choice because you actually do love Jesus Christ so much it's in your bones. And that's who these people were.
That's a beautiful witness. A truly beautiful witness. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to the Register writer, Peter Jesser Smith. We are talking about an interview he did with Cardinal Dolan. The interview is titled on our website, ncregister.com. Cardinal Dolan, he says, we can't forget about our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East. And, one of the things that the Cardinal says in this interview, and you picked out right in the beginning, Peter, in your introduction, is that many of these Christians who have fled have family members who are really martyrs, who have died for their faith. And even these men and women who are still alive are in many ways like martyrs because of the lives they are living. What did the Cardinal witness about these people's faith?
Well, I think some of these stories are actually very hard. And indeed for me, because I had met Iraqi Christian refugees in Jordan, it brought back some other hard memories. But the Cardinal was invited into this to visit this one woman in her caravan, and she showed him a picture of her son, who had been married a month, and she told him that when ISIS came in, the militants had her son right in front of her, and they cut his throat, and they were laughing at her.
Wow. Oh my goodness!
And they killed him because he would not renounce Jesus Christ and convert to their form of Islam. But they laughed at her and they taunted her, saying, she's a Christian. She has to forgive us. And as the Cardinal said, can you imagine? I can't.
No.
It's just very powerful. But the witness of that woman was, she said, I do forgive you. And she said to the cardinal, and I do forgive them, and I keep trying to forgive them.
It's amazing.
And he said that was worth a whole retreat right there. But I tell you, that's their lives. This woman has a martyr for a son.
Right.
And in many ways, they were trying to get her to reject Christianity by taunting her.
Right.
And she just embraced Jesus and the cross and said, I forgive them.
Yes. That's
something that we as Catholics really need to take to heart.
Absolutely, Peter. Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the biggest spiritual lessons that we can learn from these Christian Christian men and women in the Middle East, where Christianity is so old and is being threatened in such a great way. I do that part of the interview where you ask the cardinal what was most memorable, and he does say that these people lack rancor. They are not angry.
Yeah, no, they're not.
They are at peace. And Peter, really, I want to talk about something very important, because you're talking about these groups that are being, you know, able to provide the charity that people need, just the very welfare that they need. How can we help? I mean, the cardinal gives us some ways. Can you recount some of the ways that we can help, both physically and perhaps spiritually?
Absolutely. Well, here's what the Christians always tell you. And, you know, we actually have to really take it seriously. But they say, pray for us.
And
literally, that is probably the most important thing. And we actually really have to do it. We need to ask, we need to tell our priests, we need to get our neighbors, we need to include it in our own private petitions, but especially have it at Mass. They used to pray for the Christians behind the Iron Curtain. In Cardinal Dolan's time, we need to pray for the Middle East Christians who are being martyred today. We don't seem to quite understand that the persecution of the Christians in the Middle East is the worst that has ever been in our history. The lives of the martyrs isn't back in 200 AD. It is in 2016. It's being written in the lives of all these people, and you can read it in their eyes. So the first thing that we need to do is, as a church, we need to pray.
We will certainly encourage our listeners to pray, but also to look at your article where there are other ways of helping these Christians in the Middle East. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jeanette.
When we return, what do you know about the Society of the Most Holy Trinity? We'll be talking about the founder of the SOLT next. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Carrie Grass, has a doctorate in philosophy from the Catholic University of America and was formerly the Rome Bureau Chief of Zenit's English edition. Carrie is the author of Nudging Conversions, a practical guide to bringing those you love back into the church, and the co-author with George Weigel of City of Saints, a pilgrim's guide to John Paul II's Krakow. Carrie talks with Jeanette today about Father James Flanagan, the founder of the Society of the Most Holy Trinity.
Carrie, it's so good to have you on Register Radio. You've been blogging for the Register now for many months, and I've yet to have you on to talk about the good work you're doing. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's really a pleasure to join you today.
You know, today we're talking about an event that happened a month ago. It is the death of Father James Flanagan, who is the founder of the Society of the Most Holy Trinity. He died at age 91 on March 24th, and right after that, Mother Angelica died, and at least the Register got all caught up in that, and we didn't really have a chance to do more on the life of this remarkable priest. But you, thankfully, wrote a blog on the Register titled Father James Flanagan, the Most Influential Catholic You Have Never Heard Of. And so I wanted to talk about who this man was and to start precisely with his life. Can you tell us about...
He was this incredible soul. I think he was born in 1924, and he went to Notre Dame at the college and was a national champion football player for them for 3 years. But in the midst of all that, he also got involved in the Second World War. And he was a frogman, but before that, he had to set off ordinances on D-Day. And out of 100 men, only 3 survived, and he happened to be one of them, thankfully. But he had this sort of miraculous period of his life as certainly a heroic football player and a hero in the military. And then after that, he decided to become a priest. And from there, he was a priest in Boston. And from there, he felt called to start the Society of Our Lady of the Trinity. And he moved to New Mexico, and that's where they were founded and where he was buried. But the SOLT now serves, I think, 13 different countries. They've got 150 priests, 120 consecrated or women religious, and then they have hundreds of lay people that are involved in their mission to really serve the poorest, the poor, and just fill in the culture wherever it needs. They don't have a specific charism, except that they fill in where the need is the greatest with the gifts that people have.
You know, you mentioned in your blog that he is little heard of. He's influential, but many people don't know who he is. You had the privilege of knowing Father Flanagan. How did that happen?
Well, I got to meet him. I had gone on a retreat with him. I have a good friend that is a member of SOLT, and she arranged for me to go on a retreat with him before I moved to Italy, and that was just one of those life-changing experiences. And then when I moved to Rome for a couple of years, he was still there, and so he was gracious enough to direct me spiritually for about 2 years. And during that time, I got engaged. So he also did the marriage prep for my husband and I, which was just an incredible blessing. It was so tailored to who we were as individuals and as a couple, and really one of those gifts that you can't even ask for, because it's just, you know, beyond the pale as far as the spiritual blessings from it.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to a Register blogger, Carrie Gress, and we are talking about Father James Flanagan, the founder of SOLT, who died in March. Now, Carrie, what would you say is Father Flanagan's biggest legacy?
Well, I think much of it is really just, the order of SOLT and all those priests and religious and lay people who are following his mission and really serving in a way that follows a very Marian theology. I think that's very profound. But what's so striking about it is that, Father was born in Boston. His father had been a judge, and he was fairly influential from a very influential family in Boston. And so for decades, he had, Life magazine, Time magazine, all kinds of people wanting to cover what he was doing, because he was going to places that were, really off the charts as far as poverty. And he was going in there with members of SOLT and serving those in the greatest need. And for decades, he would never, he had no interest in that. He really just wanted to stay very small and very humble and focus on that. And I think what I talked about in my blog a little bit was really just the fact that in this age of celebrity, what an remarkable contrast it was to his life, in contrast to how media focused we are in the world today, and yet he shunned it so much. And in fact, when we went to put the blog together, the editor couldn't even find a photo of him in all the usual photo places. We had to actually get one from SOLT because he just was so off the radar as far as being able to find him in the media.
That's right. That's right. You know, I love the blog. Really does give a real picture of what he was like. Just mm-hmm. he called you sis, and that's something yeah. that he called many people in his Boston accent, just to show they were a sister in Christ. And that's it's really he sounds so down to earth, but he was yeah. also miraculous. Like tell us some of the just truly miraculous things about this man.
Well, I didn't include too many of them in the blog because, you know, people haven't heard of him, and I wanted him to be believable.
Right.
There are just incredible miracles that have been associated with him through his life, and I know that are going to be coming now that he's in heaven. But he, there's stories of people who died, and he was able to bring them back to life. There's incredible stories about women who experienced infertility, and one of those I featured in the blog. I talked about mm-hmm. a woman who found out, you know, she and her husband had been praying for years to have a baby, and finally she went to a doctor, and the doctor said, you know, it's an impossibility, you have an infantile womb. And so father went to an OBGYN, a friend of his, to talk to him, because he said he was thinking about sending this couple to Belize, and he wanted to make sure that it was going to be safe if, in fact, she was able to conceive to have a baby. And so he talked to this OBGYN and said, you know, look, if a woman who has an infantile womb becomes pregnant, will she be able to deliver safely? And the doctor said, well, father, you know, a woman who has an infantile womb is never going to be able to have a baby. So father kept pressing, but if she has a baby, will it come out safely? And they went back and forth like this for a while until the doctor, you know, is sort of just exasperated, thinking that Father Jim is the most dim-witted person he's ever encountered. And finally, you know, the doctor said, well, if God can get the baby in the womb, I'm sure he'll bring the baby out safely. And sure enough, you know, this woman ended up having many children despite the infantile womb. And father, you know, had many people pray to St. Joseph and talk very explicitly about the gifts that St. Joseph has to be able to work on this earth. And one of them is related to having children. And so he was really a big propagator of Novenas to St. Joseph. For that specific intention.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. I enjoyed your blog so much. It is in the May 1st edition, also of the print edition of the Register, because we wanted to make sure that people did know Father Flanagan. So it's really great to be able to talk to him here. But, you know, Carrie, you've also been writing about something that's coming up in the future. This happened last month, you know, but you've been writing mm-hmm. about something that'll happen this summer, and that is World Youth Day in Krakow, Poland. You've mm-hmm. been doing a series of blogs on that, and I did want to have a chance to talk about that a little bit. Why do you know so much about Poland?
You know, I've been there about 10 times, and each time I was there was usually about a month. I did spend one time there for 4 months. But I was in charge of a conference that George Weigel and Michael Novak and Father Newhouse and several others put together for young American Catholics as well as Eastern European Catholics to go over Catholic social teaching. And so I went on that as a student and then later was the organizer for the conference. And so I got to know Poland really well. And George Weigel and I have written a book called City of Saints that is basically puts the life of Karol Wojtyła into context within Krakow. And it really brings another dimension to his life that I think you can't really get unless you have been to Krakow and you've seen the places, you've smelled the smells, you've tasted the taste, you've heard the mm-hmm. sounds of this really colorful city that has so much cultural richness. And so the idea for the blog has really been to focus on a lot of the things that we couldn't put in the book. There was so much to put in the book already that was really mm-hmm. related specifically to Wojtyła's life. But it seemed so inadequate in my mind as far as what I could really tell people about what I had learned about Krakow and Poland over the years. And I don't have any Polish blood. I have no Polish family, but I really feel like I've become an adopted Pole because I've just fallen in love so much with the culture. And so I think that it has a lot to offer us, particularly as Catholics, that, you know, we just haven't heard about because the Iron Curtain and, you know, just all the struggles that Poland has been through. So that was what the idea of really behind the blog.
That's great. Can you give us something concrete about what do you think is particular about what Krakow can offer?
Well, I think the fascinating thing is, you know, when we went to work on this project, George and I, you know, we mapped it out. And I think what came very clearly to my mind, and I'm sure George had already thought of this, but it just kept coming more and more clear, was to see how Krakow really formed the person of John Paul II, and to see how so many of those initiatives that he did during his pontificate started in Krakow, whether it was working with young people or theology of the body or all those kinds of things. And so in our book, we really focus on those concrete places, and those experiences that brought about all of these things that we now are living in the wider church. So I think that's really in a nutshell. But certainly, the vibrancy of the city, the deep culture, the incredible love of music, certainly the adherence to the faith in a way that is just astounding, especially among young people. I think those kinds of things are just incredible examples for those of us, especially who are not necessarily used to seeing a young church. And I think that's, mm-hmm. What a lot of young people that go to World Youth Day will be surprised by. You'll see how
Absolutely.
Young the musicians are and the people involved in parishes and the young priests, that it's not just something for, older people to experience.
Absolutely.
So that's, I think, the heart of it.
That's great. Having been both to World Youth Days and to Krakow, I strongly mm-hmm. suggest people who can't go at least follow your blogs and find out about this this wonderful city. You've written about salt mines. You've written about chant. You've written about many things that I think many people will find interesting. So I'm grateful for the good work that you're doing. I also encourage all of our listeners to pray for the repose of the soul of Father James Flanagan, but also to keep watch for this person who may one day be bringing many more souls to Christ as a saint of the church. Yeah. Carrie, again, thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com or ewtnradio.net. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.